it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host, and joined today so happily by Damon Siles, an alderperson from the town of Carrboro.
Welcome. Hello, Gene. Thank you. Glad to be back.
So happy to have you. Yeah, you know what? I'd have you, you know, once a week.
I would love to come here more often.
If you would come here more often, I would dearly love that.
Feeling like it was overdue.
I think you should be our senior Carrboro correspondent.
I'm ready for it.
Perhaps our only Carrboro correspondent, but senior. You know, you have some gray hair, so just I hope that's not news to you. Probably not.
It's a little painful, but no, it's not news.
Yeah, it's not painful. Come on. There are things we can call painful. you know, there's a great old Irish expression that was mentioned at Ted Kennedy's wake about that it's an Irish blessing that you live long enough to comb gray hair, which he did and his brothers did not. So, you know, it's sad. It was sad for the family when he died, but you know, he got to live a long life, which was a new thing in his family. So it's a great thing to have gray hair. Congratulations on your gray hair.
Thank you.
A very impressive display of it, by the way. You know, some people, when you get gray hair, sometimes it doesn't come in how you want. Some people get like.
Gene, you're making me blush now.
I know. Sergio Garcia, for example, a wonderful golfer, still a very young guy, has grown out his beard. He's playing in the Players Championship. I know you care deeply about this. He's got this one funny little patch of gray hair in his beard. All the rest is dark brown like his hair. And I thought, you know, if I had a little gray swatch like that, you know, that looks like, you know, a rash, I think I would shave that beard off.
It's a patch of character.
It's a patch of character. That's when he's, you know, you hear about people hitting a rough patch. Well, he's hit a patch of character. Mm. It's on his face.
Embrace it.
Own it, man. You got to own it. So speaking of owning things, what a great segue. We didn't plan this, I promise. I wanted to add, I saw a story the other day about Carrboro changing its name. This is something that's come up kind of related to, related to Silent Sam. Silent Sam, a guy we'd like to see relocate somewhere else.
It's time.
It's time. I think actually it's probably, I think you agree, probably past time for that to happen. And of course, Julian Carr, the person for whom Carrboro is named, made a terrible racist speech. Famously at the dedication of Silent Sam. And there's been some talk about renaming the town, changing the name of a whole town just because the town was named for this person. I think that Carrboro's probably not going to change its name, the town. But I'm very interested to hear your thoughts about your discussion as a board about what to do instead. So I'd like for you to recount that story for me. You can look it up if you like.
Sure. I assume you're talking about the conversation we had last week about the so-called truth plaque idea.
Yeah, a truth plaque. I think this is a fantastic idea.
Well, I can't take any credit for it. It was actually brought to us. The idea was brought to us by Alderwoman Jackie Gist, who I think had seen something similar done in one or two other communities in the region. Mm-hmm. I don't remember where specifically.
Okay.
And she raised the idea to the board. I think we've been generally receptive to it. We haven't had a whole lot of conversation about it other than to kind of say to the staff, would you please explore this idea and do some thinking with community members about what such a plaque or a monument or whatever might look like.
Right.
The general idea is to just, you know, at a minimum have some public acknowledgement of the role that Julian Carr played in the fundraising for and dedication of Silent Sam.
Right.
It actually goes even a little bit deeper than I think than you described. You know, he was Francis Venable was the president of UNC at the time,
right.
And he was also very deeply involved in fundraising for the statue. Carrboro's name before it was called Carrboro was Venable. It was named after Francis
Venable. Oh, I didn't
know
that. Interesting.
And so my understanding is that they were both actually involved in Silent Sam arriving into the community.
And I know this, but remind me if you know the year that Silent Sam was actually erected and dedicated. Was it 35 or something like that? It was in the 30s?
You know, that's a good question. I don't remember.
I think it was, you know, well back there. That's my recollection. And I'm, you know, just thinking of, you know, If so, it fits so well with a depressed economy, you know, people being, you know, in great economic difficulty and afraid, and how that is exploited by people.
I don't remember what year it was that it happened, but it was part of a larger wave of statue dedications happening all over.
They
were, and it was really a resurgence of white supremacy that was happening.
Exactly.
At the time. There was a fear campaign going on in the region at the time to essentially put people of color back in their place, is the way that they saw it. Right.
Right.
And these statues were a way of explicitly saying that.
Right.
You don't belong here.
Not subtle at all.
Not subtle at all. So, I mean, I think that's what's been difficult about some of the conversation around the Confederate monument on campus and others around the region, is that they're presented as if they are simply monuments to the war dead.
Right? Yes.
When, in fact, the purpose of them being dedicated in the first place was very little to do with honoring veterans and very much to do with uplifting the lost cause.
Right. And where else would you... Under what possible circumstances would you erect statues to traitors? You know, these were traitors. They attacked the United States of America. It depends on what side you're on and whatever. That equivalency is part of this false narrative, you know.
I think, whatever you think about what the motives of the people who felt they were honoring the war dead were or might have been, I think putting in that larger historical context is, to me,
right,
what's most important, which is that it, these were statues that were erected many, many years after the war, decades after the war.
Right, right.
And they were part of a larger political movement happening at the time.
They were a device.
A reactionary movement.
Yeah, they were just a device.
It wasn't really about the Confederacy. It was about a resurgence of a violent white supremacist movement.
You know what it reminds me of, Damon, this disconnect between, you know, what it sort of appeared to be about and what it was really about reminds me a lot of this conflation of athletes kneeling during the anthem and a claim that that has something to do with disrespecting the flag or the troops. And this is utterly false. But the conflation was largely successful.
Well, jingoism is easy to do.
Yeah, it's easy and it's short term. It's very short term gain. And you know, leaders who tend to think a little bit more, you know, play long ball, so to speak, you know, think about, well, yeah, that might help me next week, but then what? You know, well, some politicians don't really think that way. They don't think in that long-term trajectory of what will this mean for me overall and what about my legacy? And no, I don't think they worry about that, some of them. So I'm glad you guys are not going to change your name because...
Well, we haven't actually discussed that, but
yeah.
This idea of this plaque or monument of some kind to at least acknowledge a part of the history of the town, of the person after whom the town is named. We'll see where that goes. I don't know yet, but it's part of something that we tasked ourselves to do back last year after the incidents in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
We passed a resolution at that time that. And we kind of dedicated ourselves to some things that I think we need to follow up on. One of them was to do some truth-telling about our own history. I think the idea for doing a plaque or something like it falls in line with that.
Right.
But there are other things we tasked ourselves with doing in that resolution that I think we still have work to do on.
Like?
One of the first things in the resolution was to commit ourselves to being much more intentional about engaging youth in the community and to building building leadership in the community and in the community's youth, and having our youth groups engage with each other a little bit more formally.
Right.
We have a bunch of different youth groups in the community right now, including the mayor's youth advisory board. We have the Recreation and Parks Department's youth council. We have the NAACP's youth council. We have all these different youth groups, and I think that's a great place to start. Getting people involved.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, you guys do a great job with community engagement on a lot of different levels, and your advisory boards you're blessed with a lot of very motivated citizens. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later on. I remember when you all were first talking about that, which is a couple of years ago, saying that you really wanted to get that rolling, you know, to get more youth involved, formally advising the town that they should have a seat at the table when you're looking at parks and when you're looking at the various uses of land and developing the tax base, you know, they should have a vote in that.
Yeah, it's been exciting.
Or a voice in it, anyway.
Some of my favorite meetings that I've attended over the past few years since being on the board have been my visits to the Youth Advisory Board, which the mayor has put together over the last couple of years. It's been a lot of fun.
They must be the coolest meetings, right?
They are great meetings. and we also have another one of our advisory boards, a standing advisory board called the Safe Routes to School Implementation Committee. And that is a committee that's responsible for implementing our Safe Routes to School program, which is about, you know, encouraging folks to find ways to bike or walk to school rather than drive. And that advisory board actually has youth members on it, which I believe is the only advisory board the town has that does that. But that's not because young people can't or aren't allowed to serve on the other advisory boards.
Right.
We just haven't done it, I think, a
haven't
good job
done the
of encouraging
outreach
them
to get
so,
them. Right, right. So. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, they really have a stake in that.
Right.
And they want to get to school in one piece.
Right.
And you have great bike lanes and things going on. I saw that Bike to School Day was a big success the other day.
Yeah, it was great. The weather was perfect for it, and the bike racks at Carbro Elementary at least were overflowing with bicycles.
So. I saw that picture of that. Wow, that was fantastic. All right, we're going to have more with Damon Siles in just a moment. We're going to step aside. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back, and we're talking some more with Damon Siles about all things Carbro. Tell me, you know, we were talking about happy things like biking to school. So now I'll make the easy segue from that to taxes.
Oh, good.
So there's you have a proposed budget for taxes that for a $300,000 house will send taxes up $15. Since everybody's house is $300,000, it seems like in Carbro. So what do I get? If that's my house, what do I get for my $15? That's the easy way to ask the question.
That's a great question. We, as you said, we just in the past couple of weeks on the board received a presentation from the town manager, a presentation of his recommended budget for the next fiscal year. He is recommending a half-cent increase in the property tax rate for next fiscal year, as well as in the two following fiscal years.
Mm-hmm.
So that over the next 3 years, we would be looking at a 1.5 cent increase
right.
in the property tax rate. The purpose of that increase would be to provide a dedicated source of revenue for our affordable housing special revenue fund.
Oh, so this money would be set aside for affordable housing?
That's right.
Yeah.
The proposal
great.
That the manager made was to have this tax rate increase be dedicated entirely to our affordable housing fund.
Great.
It's an issue that, you know, has become an increasingly important priority for us, as you know, not only in Carbro, but throughout
right.
the county, throughout
right.
the region, really.
Right.
And we started a couple of years ago in Carbro by pouring a ton of money into our affordable housing fund that we raised by selling off a small piece of property, a condo downtown that the town owned. That allowed us to begin funding some of our priorities through the Affordable Housing Fund. But now, mm-hmm. of course, we're spending that money down, and there's
right.
not a sustainable – we haven't had a
right.
sustainable way to keep it funded. So
right.
the purpose of this tax rate increase would be to have a sustainable source of revenue
flow, right.
for the Affordable Housing
right.
Fund.
Yeah. yeah. Well, that's
that's where it's going.
That seems like a good plan, and, you know, and it's implemented over time so people can – get acclimated to it, I guess, is a way of putting
yeah, I
it.
Like. I mean, I do like that the manager and his staff presented it in that way, this idea of kind of doing
yeah.
it slowly.
Right.
Not one big increase
right.
in one
phasing
week
it
year,
in
phasing
so that
in.
People aren't knocked back by it. And,
right.
and but also so that, you know, once you decide it, it's part of your so next year it'll be part of your continuing budget. You won't have to discuss it all over again.
Well, I mean, actually, we would have to discuss it all over again.
Do you have to reapprove that particular piece?
So we have to the board adopts a budget for every fiscal year, and we can't
right.
legally commit future boards, right? Technically,
well,
it would be a future
correct.
Board to
right.
doing something.
Right.
to adopting a certain budget. In other words, the budget is adopted for a single fiscal year.
Right.
We would have to do the same thing again in the following for the following fiscal year and again for the one after that.
Yeah, that's true. That's yeah, but there's so much stuff in the budget. It seems unlikely to me that you would go back and reconsider unless a board member had a reason that they wanted to put that back on the table.
Right.
It would tend to continue.
Or if the community decided that it was
something
they wanted to do.
Or if the community did. Yeah. And see, this is the important thing about Carrboro is that, and, you know, other towns have this too. I just, you know, my experience as an observer of Carrboro is specific about how the Board of Aldermen works and how it works with regard to its advisory boards and how in meeting after meeting on topic after topic, if there's a whiff of controversy, that the board's instinct, if that's not really a good word, but it's the best I have that's kind of shorthand. The board's instinct is to say, wait a minute, this could be controversial. Let's figure out how we can get input from the community to sort this out instead of sort of digging in on positions and saying, well, my constituents want this and, you know, I represent them and I know it. And so that's what it is. You know, elected officials can tend that way, but it's just not the culture in the town. It's just not.
I think we do. You know, we're susceptible to what you described. That you know, we want to make decisions. We want to make them in an efficient way and get things done.
Right.
But I think,
right.
You know, I think it's probably not the worst thing if we take our time when it's important and when we
right.
think that community might need to have a little bit more input.
Yeah, you
that's
know,
certainly
usually.
True on the town budget.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
really,
oh,
the,
absolutely.
The biggest decision the board makes every year is to adopt the town
it's
budget.
To adopt that budget, right.
And we don't always get a lot of input on that process, unfortunately, but it is really the most important thing we do.
Yeah, this is my question, and it's your question, too. It's the $64,000 question, as the old game show used to say. Why don't people come out to these public hearings on the budget? It's just, it's a truism. It's not unique to Carrboro at all.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's gotten to the point
where
there's a lot of
reporting
sort of
about it.
Just about it every once in a while when it comes around. We sort of know that we're going to get a visit from one or two people who come up every year to thank us for whatever we're doing or to recommend that we do something in a different way or to ask that we keep doing something that we've already done. And, you know, always sort of, you know, jokingly observe that there's no one else in the audience.
It's, yeah.
But,
it's,
you know,
really something.
I think it's, you know, I was looking at the recommended budget for next fiscal year the other day. And, you know, it's a couple hundred pages of detailed descriptions of how
yeah.
we want to spend $20 million. So
right.
It's not light reading. And
right.
it takes time and effort to figure it out.
Right.
And... Yeah, I think it's nice.
I guess people just have trouble zeroing in on a specific relationship between, you know, this $1,000 and this project, and, you know, that they're against that.
Yeah, I think what typically happens when people do come to talk to us about the budget is that what they want to talk to us about the specific area they're interested in, right? So we
right.
might hear from one or two people who come speak with us about, say, continuing to fund a particular affordable housing program that we've been involved with for many years.
Right.
We might hear from another advocacy group or another community member about, you know, please put some money aside for better bicycle facilities or better
right.
sidewalks or whatever it is.
Right.
So people are generally going to be, and this is true throughout the year, of course, not just with the budget,
sure.
but people come and talk to us about the specific issue they're interested in.
Right.
We don't typically get comments about the overall budget and what
right.
that looks like.
Right.
And I think that's mainly because most of the budget is going to things like paying our employees, right? It's a, you know, it's mainly
apparently you have to keep paying them if they don't
salary
come back.
And benefits.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's also most of the budget and big chunks of the budget are going to things that, you know, that I think people have come to rely on. I think it's still true that the largest mm-hmm. single item in our budget every year is our contribution to Chapel Hill Transit, and it's an incredibly important priority for the community.
It's been a big success going fare free, right?
That's right. It was
yeah.
a huge success to do that. The system saw a massive spike in ridership when that decision was made. And we want to continue to take advantage of that success and make it even better.
Yeah, it's a sweet thing. I mean, especially, and it's not unrelated to affordable housing. You know, when you're looking at these transportation corridors for the fare for e-bus service and trying to focus, you know, affordable housing on those bus routes, it's a gigantic savings for people in their cost of living that they can live on a, you know, in a route where they can get to work and get to the grocery store and get to the doctor's office.
That's right.
Without having to own a car.
Transportation is a key part of the affordable housing puzzle.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and to my mind, and
people don't think of it that way, but they should.
I think increasingly people are recognizing that, and we certainly have talked about it on the board in Carrboro that, you know, it doesn't often make sense to talk about affordable housing if you're if it's not in a location that is accessible to public transportation.
Right.
Car ownership is incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
We have to have good public transportation, good infrastructure for sidewalks, and all those other things to make housing truly affordable. And that's one of the reasons that on the Chapel Hill Transit Partnership, we also have articulated a goal of making decisions in relation that in the context of affordability, in the context of communities that are more transit dependent than other parts
right.
of the town.
Right.
When we, for example, talked about the most recent round of service improvements for Chapel Hill Transit, we wanted to be clear that we were making these decisions in part because we wanted to better serve areas of the town that are dependent on transit.
Mm-hmm.
So, we talk about that all the time, and it is important, and it's something we need to always have in the back of our minds when we talk about housing.
Well, you know, we're talking with Damon Siles, and we get a little smarter every time this happens. So like I said, we should talk to you once a week. But you know, here at the Weekend Water Cooler, we have to consider other topics, and we'll consider other topics when we return in just a moment. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back, and we had to come back now with Damon Siles because the off-air conversation's getting too good to not be on the air. So we're talking about politics.
We saved the good stuff.
We saved the good stuff. Yeah. So we just say, well, you know, I think I'll hold that. Let's talk about the General Assembly. So we're recording on May 11th, and next week, which will be last Wednesday when we air. Next week, the General Assembly is going to be stormed with teachers demonstrating for higher pay, and maybe state workers just generally too, because I know that the governor wants to give state workers as well as teachers who are state workers.
And he wants to do that by postponing the tax breaks for the wealthiest North Carolinians that the General Assembly adopted.
What a horrible idea, right?
Session.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I support this use of public funds.
You support
paying teachers and other state workers.
He's Damon Siles, and he approved this message. I'm thrilled to see. I just don't know another word. I am absolutely thrilled to see all three districts locally.
Oh, that's great.
And
all over the state too.
All over the place. Just saying, yeah. You know what? You don't need to work that day. And parents' way of supporting it is that parents will figure it out about where the kids need to be that day.
And I think we have to thank Durham first of all for really sparking. Igniting this in North Carolina. It's been happening in other states, of course.
Do you think that was just the happenstance of the cycle of their meetings, or do you think all three districts just jumped in?
I think Durham pushed some people along.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of exciting things happening in Durham. I can't say enough good things about what's going on in Durham these days. And,
yeah.
I think we're all following their lead this time, which is
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I mean, good on you, Durham, because however it turned out, Durham, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County followed Chapel Hill, Carrboro. I think that was just the nature of the meeting cycle.
Right.
Teachers are going to – it's an optional teacher work day. They won't have to be at school at any point during that day. And they're going to march on Raleigh, and they're going to make a huge demonstration. And, you know, if you had told me 3 or 4 years ago that teachers wanted more pay and, you know, I think it would have been, yeah, well, you know, I just don't think you would have seen this. I just don't think that people believed in the system well enough that 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 would matter, even if they did it.
Well, I mean,
but now
I think you could argue that
all
this is an expression
states.
Of people realizing that the system isn't working. In fact, this is not a belief in the system. This is a belief in the people's own power as voters and as committed
Yeah, but that is the system. I would disagree with you. That is the system.
I guess by system, in this case, I meant our current General Assembly.
Yeah. Well, you know, but they're just people working in that system. They're not the system. They're the people working in the system. And, you know, when I see that teachers in Oklahoma are, demonstrating and getting results. Oklahoma, really? I mean, Oklahoma. I saw a teacher interviewed there and tearfully being interviewed, saying that she was at the food bank to pick up some groceries for her family because she had more month than money. And she was standing in line waiting to pick up a bag of groceries. And one of her students was there. And, you know, she's in a small town in Oklahoma. In many ways, that's unsurprising that you're going to run into people that you know when you live in a small town. But she said she was totally embarrassed and talked about all these things that are obvious, which is, what does that say to a child about growing up to be a teacher that, you know, hey, you know, grow up and be a go to college and get a college degree and be a teacher, and then you can, you know, maybe you can get in the speed line at the food bank. I mean, if they have been cutting and cutting and cutting their taxes to the point where they are not paying their teachers anything close to a living wage. And they've done this largely because they dismiss the profession as being something that women do to, you know, add a little, to what? Add beer money to the household budget, I guess.
Well, and they make arguments that they know are false about teachers not working a full-time schedule or teachers not working year-round. That's all completely false, of course. But I think it's also part – I think these demonstrations or this rally that will be happening in Raleigh, it's important not – I think to talk about it not simply about being teacher pay, but it's about public education funding in general, which this General Assembly has gutted.
Right.
And not only at the public education level but in our public university system. We're talking millions and millions of dollars being drawn out of the UNC system.
And it's just under siege. There's just no other expression for it, really.
That's right.
Right? It's just it's a budget war, and I think this is a great first assault, you know, on the gates of power in Raleigh. I love that the governor is making this proposal, saying, "Oh, wait, I know where we'll get the money. I've got this pot right over here that you all passed for this ridiculous tax cut." But that's exactly right, and that's a misstatement of the priorities of the people of North Carolina. North Carolina's changed dramatically since I moved here in 78, and you know, gosh, I think back on those years under Jim Hunt. good times, good times. You know, even though Jesse was in the mix, but the state. You know, built this terrific reputation and built it largely on building the public education system, K-12 and higher education. And I hate to see that slipping away.
Yeah. I mean, the last several years have been a purposeful eroding or dismantling of that reputation. And it's because people didn't vote in the year when the Republicans took over the General Assembly.
Right.
People stayed home, and they took over in a year when they were going to have the ability to redraw districts based on the census data. And we're paying for that today.
I was concerned when I voted recently that I just walked right in, took the ballot, walked right up, voted, walked out. No waiting, no line, no problem. That's not what I want. I don't mind a little line at the polling place. Now, I voted early, but I voted probably in the last 2 hours of early voting, and I was hoping that there'd be a little bit of a rush of people saying, "Oh, it's my last chance."
And we were talking a little bit about this off the air, but you know, it's just kind of what I meant when I said I believe it when I see it. When we hear people talking about how much more engaged folks are, voters are going to be in the upcoming election,
right?
I'll believe it when I see it. I really want it to be true, and I want to help work to make that true. If you look at the most recent election that you were referring to just in the past
week,
you know, this was an off-year election, out-of-cycle election. This is not a presidential year.
Right.
The only things on the Orange County ballot were things like county commissioner, sheriff,
clerk of court.
There were some school boards.
Which is the only race that was really close.
Right. And, turnout was not really that great. I mean, right. it was comparable to the previous elections in off-year elections.
Yeah, it wasn't a big wowee.
Right.
Look
so
at that.
If in Orange County, I mean, maybe it's a function of what was on the ballot, right? But
right.
if in Orange County, we can't motivate ourselves to be at the ballot box.
It just as a demonstration of, just as a muscle flex.
Right.
Right.
So we'll see what happens in November when it really is going to count for some of these bigger races. But and I think a lot of work that has to be done is work that needs to be done around the state, really. And I know that the Democratic Party, local Democratic Party, is working very hard to muster the resources locally to send out to other districts where the work really needs to be done.
Right.
And we'll see if we can take back some seats.
So, folks, if you really want to get engaged in this, and if you want to take the heat to where it belongs, right? The thing to do is to contact the local Democratic Party and see how you can volunteer and go out to other communities and bring resources there to do phone banking and
that's right. That's one of many opportunities available. There are nonpartisan groups that are also doing voter education, voter registration campaigns. Democracy North Carolina is an important organization working on voting reform. There are all kinds of opportunities like that to be engaged.
Right.
It doesn't have to be through the Democratic Party if that's not what folks are interested in.
Right. Well, that's a good point. And voter registrations, drives are just really, really important because a lot of people. Are you in favor of the idea of registering people automatically through DMV?
It should be the easiest thing.
It should be. It's right. I mean, we have so many things like that that just seem so easy and obvious, and yet it's heavy lifting. Precisely because of this intransigence
it's only becoming harder too, right? Just like there's been this project over the past several years of dismantling the public education system, there's also been this project on the part of the North Carolina Republican Party to dismantle our voting system, to make it a less fair system, to make it, in fact, difficult, more difficult, primarily for people of color to vote.
And elderly and poor. Yeah.
So that's their project, and they're succeeding, and we have to stop them.
Yes, we have to stop them, and we're going to work more on stopping them after we take our next break. We're talking with Damon Siles, and you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back. We're back with Damon Siles, and there is such exciting news. Now, when we air, this will already have happened. But we're going to talk about it anyway because we already know it's just going to be a fantastic success story. This year, graduation weekend, Carrboro restaurants are going to be packed for Mother's Day brunch.
As usual.
Yeah, as usual, but even more so because this year you can serve alcohol at these events. Please talk about this. Speaking of the General Assembly, and they sort of accidentally did a great thing last year.
Right. So last year the General Assembly passed a bill that enabled local jurisdictions, if they so chose, to allow restaurants and other places to serve alcohol on Sundays before noon. It was previously prohibited to serve alcohol before noon or to sell it in a store before noon on Sundays.
Right.
So that enabling legislation passed. Carrboro immediately adopted a resolution making this possible in the town of Carrboro. We were the first in the state, I believe, to make that possible. Hashtag first in brunch. So anyway, what's exciting about that and why that's relevant for us right now is that this year's graduation weekend / Mother's Day weekend will be the first such weekend since Carrboro passed that resolution last year. And I actually was just talking with one of the managers of a local restaurant yesterday and about how good this has been for our local restaurants. And
so they're definitely
a huge
weekend
that they're
expecting.
They're
seeing the benefit.
Absolutely.
They
saw it right away, which was one of the reasons that we wanted to do it so quickly last summer.
Right.
Was we had a summer coming up. We knew that the restaurants were going to be looking for opportunities to serve. So, as you know, Carrboro relies a lot on its local restaurants and bars. It's a big part of our local economy. So,
yeah.
We wanted to make it possible for them to do better.
So we want to thank the General Assembly for passing that, and yet we'd rather that they forgot all about it.
I mean,
the right thing.
I would take a well-funded education system, public education system, over two extra hours of Sunday drinking. But
right,
priorities.
we were joking about how sometimes when you're in a board meeting and it goes long, how it would be great if you could serve adult beverages. Just a joke, folks. Just kidding around. Kidding. And we came right onto this really maybe what you ought to do sometimes is relocate budget deliberations to a Sunday brunch and just do a public notice that, the Board of Aldermen will be convening at such and such a restaurant.
Budget brunch.
Budget brunch. Hey, I like it. I like it. But the only thing is no knives. There'll be no cuts. Everything, it's a buffet. It's a buffet. Maybe that kind of plays into the idea that people have about elected officials. That's not a good idea. That's not accurate about Carrboro anyway. You all are a salad bunch anyway.
Not a great stereotype to encourage.
You're not at the trough. No, no, not at all. Well, I'm really glad that's happening. I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, and you're not going to answer this. What are the three best places to have brunch in Carrboro on Sunday?
Gene,
look, he's just grimacing. You can't pick three. Pick the three best.
There are so many. Just walk around downtown Carrboro into a doorway and you will find a great brunch.
I know,
spot.
You just graze all up and down Main Street, right? It's pretty true, isn't it?
I've been seen doing that.
So, photographed, tweeted, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I mean, downtown has such a great vibe for restaurants, and you really could just go in and make a whole morning of appetizers, just dropping in, ordering something, and then nibbling on that while you're walking to the next restaurant.
I like
think
this
that should
idea.
Be an event.
I like it.
We should make this event. What would we call it? Brunch walk.
Sure. I've done some food walks in Carrboro over the past few years.
And you could sponsor people, and you could raise a little money for, the public education system, for example. you could go in and order an appetizer, and you could also pair it up with a spelling bee, that you have to spell a word correctly in order to be able to continue in the race. I like this. I like this idea.
You're going to make it difficult for people.
But yeah, right. Well, but of course now you can't. You can serve alcohol in a restaurant, but you can't walk around downtown with an open container.
As far as I know, that's true.
It's Carrboro, not New Orleans, not yet.
I've heard people ask me about this possibility. It's not something we've pursued, but
and has it been like late on a Friday night in a local establishment when they've asked you that?
Perhaps.
Although we're not going to name the establishment or those people.
It might have been many establishments. I couldn't remember.
We can't really say. We can tell you, but we'll have to kill you. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that sounds fun. And while you're grazing throughout downtown, you can admire the florafiti. I love the poetry slam quality of putting these two words together, flora and graffiti. Creating little gardens. Is this only in downtown? This is in
both
Carrboro
Chapel Hill
and Chapel Hill.
That's
right.
This is Carter Hubbard, who's a local artist, formerly of Carrboro, now sort of splitting her time between Carrboro and Portland.
That's an easy commute. Yeah. Portland, Oregon? Good grief.
We see her quite a bit, which is surprising. this will be another spring, actually. People will notice around town in the various flower beds around the two downtowns. Mm-hmm. Greenery emerging from the soil in the shape of words.
Of messaging, right.
And it's beautiful. And I believe that that's kicking off this week.
This week as we record, so just this week prior to Mother's Day, so it'll be in bloom over the summer. Absolutely a fantastic idea. You know, in Chicago they do a massive display with tulips throughout downtown Chicago.
That's great.
A place that's not that easy to grow things. And it's by the middle of summer, it's just amazing. And local businesses tend to the little garden, the flower box that's, right. that's in front of their business. It's just fantastic.
Well, yeah, just take a walk along Franklin Street in Chapel Hill and along Main Street in Carrboro, and you will see every once in a while one of these flower beds with words to greet you.
With words. Flowers with words.
It's a good combo.
Florafidi.
Carter Hubbard is the artist, and she's great.
That's absolutely fantastic. And while you're doing that, you can stop in and order an appetizer and spell a word. You never know it, but that word might be growing out of the ground at your next stop.
This is Carrboro's latest economic development strategy.
Is growing words?
Florafidi and stopping in for appetizers.
So listen, all you Carrboro and Chapel Hill, I suppose, restaurants in Chapel Hill, I suppose. I like how I throw that in there. You need to create little express to-go appetizers that are, you know, grab-and-go appetizers for the for the Florafidi walk.
We also have lots of taco trucks and other kinds of food trucks around town, so another option.
That's right. That's very good grab and go food. Okay, I'm hungry now, so we're gonna wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us here at the Water Cooler. Always a joy.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, and I'll see you again very soon, I know.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.